Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whenever you're listening, and welcome to Tri-State at the Plate. I'm your host, Andy Burdick, joined as always by our super producer, Jason Ruggiero.
Good to be here.
So, Jason, I don't know if you've seen tonight, but Ryan Braun had a 3-home run game against the Philadelphia Phillies.
I did see, and my first thought was, wasn't he hurt?
Wasn't he hurt? And not taking steroids anymore?
Yeah.
So, I want to ask, if you were in the stands in Philadelphia, would you boo Ryan Braun?
In Philadelphia? Yeah, I mean, I'm going to guess that Philadelphia is going to boo him no matter what, right?
Yeah, right. How about if you were just a neutral fan? Just at a random Brewers-Cubs game in the middle of summer. Ryan Braun hits 3 home runs. Do you boo him?
Probably not.
No booing. You're not a boo bird.
I'm not really a boo bird kind of person. I mean, at that point, it's not Ryan Braun's fault anymore, right? It's like it's your pitcher's fault for continuing to throw him lobs that he can loft into the upper deck, right?
Yeah.
Like, how many times do you have to get burned
before you learn your lesson?
Yeah, I don't
know. Maybe, you know, I never thought about that. Maybe they were just booing the pitcher.
Yeah, who was throwing?
You know, honestly, I didn't even pay attention to who was throwing. I was all caught up in the excitement of Ryan Braun's home runs.
Wasn't AJ Burnett, was it?
Wouldn't that be ironic?
I don't think so. I think he pitched the other day because I heard someone comment that he looked poor.
Yes. Yeah, he did actually. Yeah, he threw the other day. He got lit up pretty good.
Yeah.
So no booing for Ryan Braun. Yeah, I don't think I would boo for Ryan Braun. Boo Ryan Braun either. I'm not that type of person.
I don't feel strongly enough about it to get that upset.
Right. Unless if you hit him against the Pirates, maybe, yeah. Maybe I would boo then, but yeah, not just as a neutral party.
Yeah, I mean, like, if he hit 3 home runs against the Indians, I would seriously be like, all I would be screaming at the television is, stop pitching to him.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, how last year, like, Terry Francona was just, like, walking Miguel Cabrera every time he came up. He was just
right,
like,
yeah.
Like, nope, not going to let you beat me. Nope.
Yeah, that's what we call good managing.
Yeah, it's like, going to have to be somebody else. Of course, when he's at the end of his 8-year contract extension, they'll be wanting to pitch to him. But that's a different matter.
Oh, boy, yeah. The long contracts, not going to end up being so great in the end, I have a feeling.
I just can't understand. We don't want to get off on this subject, really, but I can't understand. Like, they have him under control for 2 more years. There was no rush.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
What I'm getting at is, like, I don't expect he's going to, like, fall off the table, but he could. I mean, he's an older player with a poor body type, right?
Yeah.
Like, why jump into that game a year early?
I mean, what's the best thing that you hope for based on his aging? You hope that he turns into a DH type player.
Right.
And at the end of his contract, he's hitting like David Ortiz. I mean, is that the best case scenario, what you hope for Miguel Cabrera? He turns into David Ortiz?
Oh, I think, yes, definitely. I mean, I think that would be a win. I mean, not obviously not because you're going to be paying an incredible sum of money. But if that happens, you know, it's actually not too bad.
Right. You're not getting your money's worth, but at least you're not getting totally burned at the end of the contract.
Right. But the question is, what's the more realistic outcome?
I think we're starting to see the more realistic outcomes, which are Albert Pujols and his plantar fasciitis and all kinds of issues like that.
Right. I mean, we're already kind of seeing that the Tigers were wise to maybe unload Prince Fielder.
Right.
Because he's looking kind of grim.
Yeah.
Like, the bat speed is just not there. I actually heard, I was on the ESPN Fantasy Focus, that, like, his fastball percentage, his, you know, hits off fastball is cratering. Prince Fielder. And it's like,
yeah.
That's kind of a bad sign. fastballs generally are what people do damage on.
Right. What you should be turning on and destroying.
Right. And like they were saying, you know, like it, like Prince Fielder, like he can't turn that around, you know, like he's trending towards the bad move on.
Yeah, which is not good.
Right. Which is not good.
Which is really not good.
I'm not saying that's what's going to happen to Miguel Cabrera. I'm just saying.
Yeah. I'm saying I think if he were a 40-year-old player who made $30 million worth of statistics a realistic possibility, I would be impressed. I would be really, really impressed.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
And yeah, whatever. We don't want to get into that anymore.
Yeah, five minutes of conversation about that. We could go on for days about that.
Let me just I'll put a bow on top of this conversation. As an Indians fan, I'm happy that they have signed Miguel Cabrera to a ridiculous contract extension.
Yes, yes, that's going to give them a lot less financial flexibility. That's for sure.
Right, and you know what the best part is? I don't think Mike Ilitch cares because he probably won't be alive when that contract ends.
it's gonna be someone else's problem. It's gonna be my grandson's problem. Yeah, who like, cares? Yeah,
whatever. I want to win a championship, man. But the point being, now they probably can't sign Scherzer, and that's who they really need to win a championship. You understand what I'm saying? Like,
right? Yeah.
They have Cabrera for two more years, locked in. What they don't have is Scherzer.
Right. And if Pedro Alvarez just doubled in the gap, by the way.
They're sending
Kutch home from first. Yep, Pirates are up 2-0 on the Cubs. Sorry to interrupt.
Well, that's all right. Anyways, let's move on.
Yes, let's get to the topic du jour's, the topics du jour for that's, today.
That's what happens when you do Frenchlish.
I have no idea what I'm saying.
Things don't quite line up.
I think I'm using that in the appropriate context, but I'm not 100% sure. I didn't pay attention in French class. I can't lie.
It should be topics of the day because jour is day. So it's not topics of the days.
Topics of the days. Topics of the, yeah. Yeah. Topics du jour.
Yeah.
The topics du jour. So we got the first season or the first week of the Major League Baseball season underway. And so today we're going to be talking about the Cleveland Indians first week, the Pittsburgh Pirates first week, and we're going to touch on the Erie Seawolves first week as well. They've had a pretty interesting first couple days to their season. So, Jason, let's get this thing kickstarted with the Cleveland Indians. What's going on with the tribe?
Well, the biggest news out of Cleveland is that they are passing out 6-year contracts like they're going out of style.
Like it's nobody's business.
Problem is, I don't think any of these contracts for 1 year, even if you add them all together, don't total up to Miguel Cabrera level.
Right.
But they signed Yan Gomes to a 6-year, $26 million contract with options for a 7th and an 8th year.
Now, do you know what year what years that buys out? Are we going into how many years of free agency with the options?
Let me pull that up for you here. I believe it buys out. Oh boy! Yeah, we'll come back to that in a second. I pull this.
That seems to be that, like the Atlanta Braves model right now seems to be get a year or two into free agency, and at least we have a fixed amount of money that we know we're going to have to be spending through these arbitration years. You know, they get like 1 or 2 years tacked on to the end of that, you know, Andrelton Simmons deal, whatever. And then, you know, we're getting the arb years maybe a little cheaper and a couple year or two of cheap control and free agency as well.
Right.
And I guess if you're running with a restrained budget, that kind of makes sense. I mean,
it's cost certainty, you know.
Right.
Like, you project out. You know, because spoiler alert, the next person is Jason Kipnis, 6-year, $52 million contract with a club option for a 7th year. So now that means Carlos Santana, Gomes, Michael Brantley, and Kipnis all signed through 2017. And in fact, when you factor in Michael Bourne and Nick Swisher, their contracts end in 2017. Okay, and then you guys who are still, you know, under club control then because of, you know, arbitration years like Zach McAllister, Corey Kluber, Danny Salazar, and of course, Francisco Lindor, Tyler Naquin. So those guys are all under club control through 2017. You know, but like you're saying, now you can look out and you can say Gomes, Kipnis, Brantley, Santana, Bourne, Swisher. These are fixed costs. You know
what I mean? Right.
And like on you know, they can tell now that in 2017 they already have $50 million of contract obligations.
Exactly.
You know, and like you said, when you have a limited budget, that makes a big difference. How you spend your money in the present, you know, when you know you have obligations in the future.
I
believe though, okay, so Yan Gomes last year was his first year of service. I lost him on the chart here, which means that 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It would have bought out 1 year of free, they have definitely bought out 1 year of free agency plus the two option years.
Okay.
So the two option years, just for sake of reference, which is 2020 and 2021, which is crazy to think that far ahead, $9 million and $11 million, which is pretty reasonable. You know, if he continues on this track.
Right. Yeah.
Jason Kipnis. Let's see. Oh, this chart hasn't been updated. I see. So for Kipnis, then it would be, I lost him on the chart. Okay, it would buy out all three ARB years and two free agent years and then the option year, I think. So that's why the Kipnis deal is a huge deal for them, because it's not just buying out ARB years, it's actually buying out free agent years for an all-star caliber player, you know. And that's the thing, like, Kipnis gets this I don't want to say rap, because rap is a pejorative term, reputation, that he's a blue collar player because he gets dirty and, you know, all those kind of things, which he does, but he's not it's easy to get him confused then as like a hometown favorite, you know, kind of guy. He's more than a hometown favorite. He's an all-star caliber player. He's one of the best second basemen in the game, you know. So a 6-year, $52 million contract that buys out free agent years is a huge deal.
Right. Buys out free agent years at a reasonable price.
Right. So, like I said, when you look out in the future now, Santana, Gomes, Brantley, and Kipnis all through 2017, Bourne, Swisher, McAllister, Kluber, Salazar, Lindor, Naquin, Frazier all through 2017. I mean, there's other guys too. Like, when you go through the payroll projections, like, there's not many people not under control through 2017 that are a big part of this team. There is one notable exception, and he has a bald head and pitches.
And was extended an offer
that he did not feel was appropriate. And, you know, this is all great, don't get me wrong, but as we saw in the first week, starting pitching is still a work in progress for the Indians, even with Justin Masterson. And that's like the gaping void, you know, in the players that they've locked up is pitching. I mean, if they have the money, wouldn't that just be the cherry on top, you know, to say, and Justin Masterson through 2017. But obviously that's not going to happen anytime soon.
Yeah.
Speaking of Justin Masterson, he had one really good start on opening day and one just ugly, ugly start on Sunday against the Twins. And he just couldn't even throw a strike. It was difficult to watch. Kluber, every time he pitches, seems to go into a rain delay. He's had two starts slated this year, and each one has been postponed. He is pitching right now against the Padres, and last I looked, he was throwing up a zero in the fourth inning. Oh, nope. He gave up two in the fourth inning.
Yeah.
So, yeah. He's still, you know, working through it. McAllister's start was ugly. Salazar looked bad on the surface because it was the home opener and he gave up some runs early. But really, I think he went 5 2/3 or 5 1/3 innings and only gave up two runs.
And that was in some crazy conditions too. That was,
and then like the game was supposed to start at like 4 or something, and it started at 7, and
right,
you know,
30-40 mile an hour wind gusts,
and it's like 30 degrees.
Yeah.
So, you know, all in all, still a pretty good start. And Carrasco's start was inconsistent, which is pretty much what you come to expect from him at this point. They had a doubleheader last week. They're going to have a doubleheader tomorrow because of these makeup games. And somebody's going to have to get called up to pitch that doubleheader. And it just...
Which I heard a little birdie on Twitter.
Uh-huh.
Did you hear the same little birdie?
Well, it just so happens that one Trevor Bauer's regular turn in the rotation is tomorrow in Columbus. And it's supposed... I've heard that Trevor Bauer is actually already in Cleveland.
Yep. That was the little birdie I heard. He's already in the clubhouse.
Yeah. And it makes complete sense. I don't know why, you know, your only other real option is Josh Tomlin, and he pitched on Saturday.
Right.
You're not going to pitch Tomlin. And Bauer's last outing in Columbus, he actually was great. He pitched 6 innings and gave up only one run, struck out 9, walked 2, and allowed 2 hits. So, you know, it's not that we don't know Trevor Bauer is not capable of starts like that. It's about doing them consistently.
Right, yeah.
So, not, you know, it'll be interesting to see how he pitches tomorrow. I mean, that's for sure. And the Padres, I mean, they're not a great offensive team. So, one would think it would be a good opportunity for him to get a good start under his belt. But
right.
We'll see. Santana, he looks good at third base. He does.
Yeah, I haven't seen any replays of Carlos Santana with circus music playing, so I figured that was a good thing.
There hasn't been any of those moments, really. There was like one ball that he booted, but you know, I mean, that's gonna, people boot balls. I mean, that's the reality. And
right.
All the David Murphy naysayers were put in their place yesterday when he went 4 for 5.
You're getting all your money's worth out of him in one game, huh?
Yeah. And I've just always liked the David Murphy signing. I think he's, you know, the right kind of guy for that lineup. You know, puts up a real at bat, holds down a corner outfield spot at a decent price. Anyways, what I'm really happy about.
Oh, I was just about to bring it up.
Go ahead, bring it up.
How's Lawn Boy doing?
The Chiz Kid?
Yep.
The Chiz Kid is actually 5 of 11 with 3 doubles, 1 walk, and a K.
He's killing it.
He's killing it. I say, Lonnie, keep hitting, man, so they can't send you down. Because something's going to have to give here. They got Michael Bourne on a rehab assignment, and they've got Jason Giambi spitting sunflower seeds in the dugout. But... they're claiming, you know, oh, he's going to come back, meaning Giambi. I really hope not. But, I mean, to me, one guy like Giambi on your team's okay. Problem is, You know, it's like I used to tell Bob all last year. Bob didn't like the fact that Giambi was on the team. I said, Bob, he's a 25th guy. He's not going to get to play very much, right? Problem is, isn't that Elliot Johnson's justification too?
Right, that's, yeah.
Like, you're saying, like, oh, he's a 25th guy and he can play a lot of positions. It's actually a good thing. Well, the problem is if you have two of those guys, now all you really have is Mike Avilas. Like, he's your only real bench player. And the thing I can't stand about Giambi, you put him into pinch hit, you have to make another move because he can't play the field.
Exactly.
So now you have to use two guys, okay? And so it's like I don't have any problem with, like, you DH Chisenhall, and late in the game when they bring in a right or a left-hander, you let Ryan Rayburn hit, and then maybe you put Elliot Johnson in Rayburn's place. Like, that's a move I'm okay with because you got a decent pinch hit appearance and you use that guy who's versatile in the right way. But when you put a guy who hit like 150 in to pinch hit and replace him with a guy who hits like 150, it's like, oh, you just burned up, you know, a bench player for no reason. You know, I mean, it's just the other night they pinch hit Rayburn and Avilas was in the game. There was nothing they could do. You know, they weren't going to pinch hit Elliot Johnson.
Right.
And, you know, it's like I can understand keeping a guy like Elliot Johnson. You can use him like late in the game. Say someone like Nigel Morgan comes up and Asdrubal Cabrera had the day off. Right. You can pinch hit Asdrubal Cabrera and then replace him with Elliot Johnson. That makes sense to me. But having this guy who all he can do is hit for you one time a game.
And that's it.
Oh, no, 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 no. There's plenty of at-bats for Lonnie Chisenhall at DH. Him and Rayburn and Avilas and whoever can just cycle through there whenever it's appropriate. And if they send him down when he's hitting, I'll just throw my hands up in despair. Because that's what they always complained about, was he couldn't hit. And then he hits, and they send him down.
And I'd be curious, too, and I guess I haven't taken a peek at this. Do you know, is he hitting lefties and righties?
They've been pinch hitting for him a lot against lefties.
Have they?
He just got another hit. He just singled to right field off Tyson Ross, who is a right-hander.
Atta baby chiz.
But, I mean, I'll pull it up, but I don't think he probably has gotten a single at bat against lefties. They haven't really had any blowout games where they just leave him in there, I don't think.
Right.
I'll check here. But
that could end up being the only...
But you can't use Giambi against... Let me put it.
Right, yeah. That's
you valid. You shouldn't use Giambi against a left-hander either, honestly. I mean, that's the benefit of having Rayburn.
Yeah.
Right? The two of them can platoon together. And Terry Francona basically admitted the other day that he's pretty much going to play David Murphy every day. You know, he sees David Murphy's, like, career... This is off the top of my head. Career batting average against righties is like .275, and against lefties is like .250. And he's like, yeah, he's going to play pretty much every day. So you're going to have, you know, Ryan Rayburn available to you more often than not. And, you know, when you're facing David Price... Start Ryan Rayburn. Just a little hint. But, no, Chisenhall has not faced a lefty all year.
No lefties yet.
But, anyways, moving on to more frustrating roster moves, kind of in the same vein. To make room for one, Jason Giambi, and of course, Elliot Johnson, and everyone's favorite, T. Plush. Nigel Morgan, they had to give the boot to Preston Gilmett, Frank Hermann, and Colt Hines off the 40 man. See, this is what's going to really burn me up. If then they like decide, well, you know what, we aren't going to bring Giambi back. Well, they had to lose Preston Gilmett to the Orioles. They traded him to the Orioles for an infield prospect. You're going to love this name. Named Torsten Boss. Then they traded Colt Hines of the Dodgers for another good name, right-hander Duke Von Schaman.
they don't even sound like real names.
They don't.
The only thing better would be if they got Tuffy Goosewitch.
Exactly. Apparently, I saw before we came on for the podcast that Frank Hermann did clear waivers, so he's back with the Indians, but they lost the other two.
Yeah.
That's the thing that boggles my mind. Like, you lost a serviceable reliever to make room for Giambi, who shouldn't even be on the team, and now you're going to send down a former top prospect who's actually hitting to make room for Giambi.
Who could probably have the same impact sitting on the bench just being a coach.
Exactly. And that's my point. That's fine. Like, I understand he had a big impact on the clubhouse, but can't he have that same impact? Anyways, Michael Bourne keeps trying to rehab, but his games keep getting rained out. so that's kind of dragging on. I don't know if you remember, the Indians signed George Cotteris right before the season started to be a backup catcher in case they needed like a real backup catcher.
Right.
It's rumor has it, as Adele would say, that his contract has an April 30th out clause. Which makes sense because he's not a great guy, but he's a legitimate backup catcher. And so he wants out of town if he doesn't have a job by then. And as far as, you know, somebody's going to have to get the boot here. we know that Michael Bourne's going to come back. I don't know that they're going to get rid of Nigel Morgan. Maybe they will. They have an 8-man bullpen, so that's the first place you would look, although your starting rotation looks pretty rough. So I don't know if you can go there to nab one of those spots, but Pestano doesn't look very good. And Wood, you know, he's got that 100-mile-an-hour fastball, but sometimes he can't find the plate. Like, he hit Jason Bartlett like in the rib cage the other day. It's like, all right, so we're having a little trouble now. So I don't know if one of them, you know, will get the Columbus shuttle. Pestano basically said, you know, admitted as much the other day. He said something to the effect of like, I'm pitching for my life right now.
Right.
I don't know, though, that you can go to a 7-man bullpen when your starters look so poor.
Yeah, and Francona had an 8-man bullpen all last season, correct?
Pretty much. I mean, there were more, you know, it went up and down, but, I mean, he definitely prefers the 8-man bullpen. And, I mean, that's the whole point of having guys like Elliot Johnson and Mike Aviles that can play pretty much anywhere, is so you can keep an extra reliever.
Yeah.
Problem is, then you try to keep a guy who can't play anywhere.
Right.
But, and the last thing I wanted to say is, because I know Bob's always asking me about these two guys, Dylan Howard and Jake Cisco have both retired from professional baseball, which is kind of a shock because they're both part of the 2011 draft class. Howard was the Indians' second-round pick, and Cisco was the Indians' third-round pick. And, I mean, when you look at the Akron rotation and all you see is Cody Anderson with any upside, it's because these two guys have never panned out, and now, you know, they're washed out.
Huh. Yeah, that's a quick in and out of baseball there.
Yeah, I mean, to be, you know, two pitchers taken in the second and third round, and 3 years later you're done.
Yeah, baseball is one of those sports you can hang around for a while, too, if you want to.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a strange development for sure.
Well, Godspeed to both of them in their future endeavors.
Yeah. So, what's going on in Pittsburgh?
Well, funny you should mention Pittsburgh, because that's what I'm about to talk about on this podcast about the Pirates and Indians. So, Clint Hurdle, Neil Huntington, both extended through that magical year of 2017. Must have been something. Must have been the planets are all aligned for 2017, because we got Indians players all locked up through there, and now we've got the manager and general manager of the Pirates all locked up there.
Yeah.
They both stated that they, you know, they enjoy working with one another. They seem to work well together. And Andrew McCutchen came out and voiced his support. He said that they've had managers in the past come and go. Now they have some consistency, and it's kind of changing with the philosophy in Pittsburgh as well. So I think that's kind of a great reward for Huntington, especially, who's taken Pittsburgh from when he, you know, entered in 2007, taking Pittsburgh from having nothing in that farm system. No, you know, one of the worst ranked farm systems in baseball to one of the best now. And I think that that's also, you know, another very appropriate reward for Hurdle's success. You know, you looked at what he did last year, and I would say it's safe to say that he pretty much exceeded everyone's expectations except for the crazy Yinzers.
Right.
So, you know, I like that. I think that's the Kutch is right on when he says it kind of builds that trust. There's that, you know, between the players and the front office, that they know who's going to be there and what the philosophies are like. So seems to be a positive step in the right direction for Pittsburgh.
Can I just say that I was just saying how the David Murphy haters getting their just desserts, right? He just hit a 3-run homer. Continue. Boy,
yeah, you're really loving that, aren't you?
So, yes. No, I agree. I think, you know, stability. I mean, that's a huge part of organization success. Like, I mean, I don't really follow football super closely, but I do see that the Browns stink, okay? And to me, part of that problem is that there's no stability, right? Like,
there's no stability anywhere.
Right. Literally, anywhere you look in the Browns organization, there's
no front office. My favorite is the picture of the Browns quarterback jerseys, starting with Tim Couch, that just have all the quarterbacks' names crossed off and the next one added on the list.
But, you know, it's to me, it's like it's no surprise that, you know, we'll transition back to baseball, that, like, the Cardinals, you know, the Red Sox, the whatever, you know, that they have consistent success. It's not just about money. It's about consistency. It's about the ownership picking that group of people that they think are the best suited and sticking with them even when they have a bad season.
Right, yeah. And most importantly, it's finding someone who has a plan, you know, an executable plan, a plan that will work. And that seems to be what Pittsburgh has. You know, you hear the same philosophies repeated over and over and over again. And regardless of which philosophy it is you're hearing, whether it's Neil Huntington talking about how they don't talk shop to the media about anything that's going on in the organization until it's completed, you know, whether it's Clint Hurdle talking about the emphasis of the pitching staff on focusing on ground balls, you know, that all that stuff is consistent. So that's reassuring to me as a fan, that there's that consistency that's been rewarded. So talking about the Pirates play recently, the Pirates took the St. Louis series. They thumped the Cardinals in the first game of the series, 12-2. Then they dropped the second game, 6-1 to St. Louis. The interesting thing about the Pirates, their wins have all been fairly slim margin wins for the most part. You know, we're looking at like 3-1, we're looking at 4-3, you know, versus the Cubs. And then, you know, you get into that Cardinal series, boom, the first game on Friday, they could put up, you know, 12 runs on the Cardinals. And, you know, like tonight, they're starting the series with the Cubs right now. You know, they're already out to a hot start. You know, they're up 4-0 already on the Cubs. So I don't know whether, you know, we're so early in the season that it's tough to tell, but whether we're seeing improvements from the offense and maybe we're going to start seeing a little more offensive output this season, which was Pittsburgh's biggest problem last year. So I'm kind of hoping that this is a trend that we're going to continue to see happening is this increased output in runs. But a big part of Pittsburgh's offensive success early on the season, and it's kind of strange to say, but Hurdle's been deploying Gabby Sanchez and Travis Ishikawa in a platoon somewhat effectively.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've got Travis Ishikawa going into tonight. He's hitting a triple slash 308, 400, 508, and 15 plate appearances. He has 2 walks and 3 strikeouts. That's good for an OPS plus of 170. So if you're not familiar,
excited.
What's that?
Let's not get too excited.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to maintain that pace all season. I've got this sneaky suspicion. But if you're not familiar with OPS plus, is basically just your OPS adjusted to league averages of 100. So basically, if your OPS plus is at 100, you're a league average hitter. So you know, so far, Hurdle's been putting Travis Ishikawa in great situations to succeed.
Hey, you know,
and then you, I'm sorry, go ahead.
You know what Lonnie Chisenhall's OPS plus is?
What?
242.
I didn't even know numbers could go that high in OPS plus.
He just like blew the scale.
But you know, like when we talk about putting players in positions to succeed, that was why I wanted to ask whether Lonnie's been facing any left-handed pitchers or not, because if they're putting him out there and he's succeeding like this against lefties, well, you know that they're seeing something in him where they think, okay, well, maybe this guy can succeed against a lefty in this situation. You know, even though he hasn't faced any lefties, I still think it's a good thing that they're putting him out there in situations where he's able to succeed like this.
Right. Well, and the point is, whether it's Lonnie Chisenhall or Ishikawa or my example, Ryan Rayburn, like using a platoon gets a bad name. But when a platoon's used effectively, Ryan Rayburn last year, over 277 plate appearances, had an OPS plus of 153.
Right.
That's valuable to your team. If you can identify like where that person is going to succeed and just use them in those situations, like, yes, you know, for a young player, maybe that's not the best thing for his development. But for someone like Travis Ishikawa or Ryan Rayburn, at this point, it is what it is. You know, if that's how you can help a team, then that's great that you can provide anything, honestly.
Right. Absolutely. It's just, yeah, I agree 100% with that.
It's just about the manager in the front office, like we said, being on the same page and saying, you know, like, well, this is how we're going to use this guy. Like, he has a very certain skill set, and if we use it in this way, he's going to be effective.
Exactly. And that goes, you know, you look at the other half of that weird platoon. I mean, it's not a straight platoon where you're talking about this guy faces lefties, this guy faces righties, but
right.
Gabby Sanchez in his at-bats, he's hitting 220, 333, 375 with a 106 OPS plus.
Right.
So I guess the big underlying question that you have to ask yourself is this platoon going to be good enough to get them through the season? Or are we going to start looking at players later on in the season? Like, are we going to look at trying to fit Andrew Lambeau in if he goes on a tear down in AAA? Or, you know, the big talk for a while there was, would the Pirates bring in Kendrys Morales once the draft is over and he doesn't have that pick attached to him?
Right.
That's where you start to see the organizational philosophies where, you know, you're talking about, well, do you think that these players are going to be able to fill that role at first base, or do we need to start looking at other options? And that's what I'll be curious to see as the year progresses, how far those numbers kind of come back to the norm or the expected numbers that you're expecting Ishikawa and Sanchez to put up.
Right. I mean, I think Ishikawa is serviceable in a platoon.
If you look at his career, both him and Gabby Sanchez. I mean, Gabby Sanchez absolutely destroys, just absolutely destroys opposite hand pitcher. He just does. He does an excellent job. It's when you start talking about getting Gabby, you know, righty on righty, that's where you start having the problems with Gabby.
Right.
So that's just kind of something to watch as the year progresses. I'll be curious to see again Pittsburgh's organizational philosophy with how they address first base or whether they feel like they even need to. Now, an area that Pittsburgh addressed with the departure of AJ Burnett, and kind of like in your David Murphy vein there, I think Edinson Volquez is out to prove all the haters wrong, Jason.
Oh, please.
Oh, yeah, that one stung a little bit, didn't it? 5 2/3 innings against St. Louis on Sunday.
So that was one start, right?
Yeah, so we have one good start under his belt there.
Well, that's
against St. Louis. And, you know, I watched the whole game start to finish, and I have to say his velocity was great, 93-94. You know, he throws that heavy sinking fastball, you know, so his fastball has a lot of life on it. And his changeup, which is apparently the year that he had that, like, breakout year in 2007 or 2008 or whichever year it was, it's kind of like the nuclear weapon in his arsenal. You know, his changeup was 83 miles an hour, so you're looking at getting that 10 mile an hour separation between your fastball and changeup. I mean, that stuff looked great. You know, they pulled him out of the game early to kind of get a good matchup. I think they pulled him out actually and brought Tony Watson in because they had a lefty up. But, you know, he'd thrown 5 2/3. He'd only thrown 81 pitches, so it wasn't like they were taking him out of the game because he was running out of gas or anything. He only walked one. He struck out four. The best part, and as a Pirates fan, this is where you start to see the philosophy again, the organizational philosophy is kind of sprouting up. He had 8 ground outs to 5 fly ball outs. And that kind of harkens back to Racy Urich and Clint Hurdle and co. and their pitching philosophies, which is, you know, we have a great defense behind you. We want you to keep the ball on the ground.
Right. I mean, listen, I saw part of the game. His stuff looked stanky, okay? Here's the problem with Edinson Volquez. He's had some good runs, all right? Over his career, which is not a short career, he's had 10 years of major league starts. He's made 155 major league starts, to be exact. His career whip is 1.49, and his career ERA plus is 84.
Right, so not good. I mean, not good. Safe to say not good, but
I'm just he looked good.
And this is where, again, you kind of have to start trusting your management as a Pirates fan. You know, if you're trying to talk yourself into being positive and trusting your front office, which, you know, if you're a Pirates fan at this point, I think you kind of have to trust what Neil Huntington and Clint Hurdle are doing. Was that Bonifacio just slapped a little hit in there? Looks like the Cubs are on the board now. They said that they had identified something in Edinson Volquez that they could fix. And they said it was mechanical and that they were working on it. And you've kind of heard them talk about it a little bit, you know, when you watch Root Sports, you see guys talking about it as far as tightening up some of his mechanics and making sure that his delivery is repeatable and just kind of simplifying everything. And when Pittsburgh traded for AJ Burnett, for example, everybody had said, oh, AJ Burnett's done. You know, he's got no gas left in the tank. In fact, it was so bad the Yankees were willing to pay half of his salary for the last 2 years of the deal. And Pittsburgh took a look at Burnett, and they were able to kind of correct his mechanics and straighten him out and get him to perform at an all-star caliber level. I mean, who's to say that they can't do that same thing with Edinson Volquez if they see something that they think they can fix?
It's possible.
I mean, you've clearly seen what he's capable of. You know what his ceiling is, which is that 2008 season.
Exactly. I mean, I've always known what he's capable of. The problem is, even that year, you know, he's kind of living on the edge. He's He's got a whip 0.3. He's walking four batters every nine innings. He's only
right
because he's striking out so many people. You know, he's always walked that dangerous edge.
But I think, again, that's kind of what you have to look for, those areas that Pittsburgh is correcting. He had one walk in his 5 2/3 innings. He had 8 ground ball outs. So I think you want to kind of keep an eye on those ratios and see if those ratios are staying steady. I mean, if he's walking, you know, 2.5 batters, 3 batters every 9, well, you're going to get a pretty good year out of Edinson Volquez. So
right.
that's where I think as a fan, you need to keep an eye on those numbers and make sure that those numbers are staying consistent.
No, I agree. The thing is, he's never walked below 4.0, except for last year where he only pitched 28 innings.
Right. And just got shellacked.
Yeah, he got shellacked, but he didn't walk anybody.
Right.
But I mean, I agree. If he can limit the walks, he's got filthy stuff. There's no doubt about it. It's just he's never been able to really do it before.
Right. And I mean, it's a $5 million pet project, so that's an expensive dice to roll, that's for certain.
Yeah. I mean, I just think I don't necessarily begrudge the signing. It's the amount that they paid.
Yeah, it was a lot of money.
I don't have a baseball team that I'm in charge of, but I would think that Edinson Volquez could be cheaper than $5 million, but maybe I just don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Well, can we move on to some somber news?
I was going to say, if that was the up, then this is the down.
This is taking a serious poo-poo on my party right now.
I'm pretty sure I forecasted this by accident, right?
Did you?
I accidentally included his name with the other person that got the same surgery.
Yeah. Jameson Taillon. I'm sure everybody's heard by now because it's been all over Root Sports, but Jameson Taillon is undergoing Tommy John surgery. It was announced on Sunday, and actually I DVR'd the game on Sunday. I went to volunteer at junior high baseball practice for a local team, and by the time I'd gotten back, my phone had just, I mean, I'd been getting text messages from like 5 different people. Like, I mean, it was a sad, sad day for me to come out to my car and see that from 5 different people.
Sure it was. I was sick. I actually got sick on the side of the road.
Oh, it's because of Jameson Taillon's injury.
No, it was before that. It may have been like a rift in the space-time continuum because it was probably around that time.
It shook all the way to you, yeah.
Yeah, but I was visiting my brother, which is about 5 hours from where I live, and my wife had to drive us home, even though she's like 6 months pregnant.
Your super pregnant wife had to drive you home?
Because I was puking on the side of the road. And so I get home and I crawl up on the couch and I pull up the Pirates game on MLB TV because the Indians game wasn't over yet, so I couldn't watch it. And the first thing they say is that Jameson Taillon is undergoing Tommy John, and I just literally like put the blanket over my head. I'm just like, oh, the misery.
You had to have Stella come out and comfort you. Stella, take care of me. I need some warm tea.
No. I was like, Andy's going to be so mad.
It was a day of mourning in my house. I didn't talk to Julie for hours. I just came down in the basement, shut off all the lights, sat in the corner. It was a sad day.
Yeah, I understand. It's very sad. I know.
But if you remember, this whole situation started out just as a sore elbow. I said, you know, we're gonna shut him down for 2 weeks for precautionary reasons.
That's how it always starts, man.
Nothing seemed too alarming. It wasn't like...
That's how it started with Carlos Carrasco.
I mean, it didn't even send off any red flags when it happened. I just feel, you know, like sore elbow, whatever, no big deal.
See, now you know. See, I learned the hard way. Now you'll know. See, as soon as somebody goes, excuse me, I have a sore bobo, there's...
You shudder. Yeah.
There's trouble.
So, I mean, the big effect of this, aside from the fact that you're talking about losing a year of development, you know, with a pitcher, is that kind of like last season with Gerrit Cole, you could look at Pittsburgh's rotation and project at some point, as long as these players are progressing like they're supposed to be, your rotation is going to receive some reinforcement, which when you're a small market club, that's the way that you have to do things. You can't go out and sign a big free agent. So for the most part, you wait until the Super 2 deadline passes, then you call up your players that are performing, and you affect wins that way.
So
and so now Pittsburgh doesn't have that.
Right.
So you're talking about you lose the contributions from players that become free agents like AJ Burnett, you know, like Wandy Rodriguez, if his, you know, arthritic elbow isn't healthy. And you're looking at, well, we'll have Jameson Taillon to replace some of that. Now we don't have those reinforcements coming up to replace some of those wins that we were expecting from other, you know, people in the rotation.
Long story short, Edison Volquez better figure it out.
Because now, yeah,
now you don't have anybody to replace him. I mean, yeah, not well, anybody.
The other thing, too, that does, so you start looking at, you know, other players down in the farm system, and you're talking about bumping other people up and putting them in different roles. And the thing I will say about Pittsburgh, and we, you know, we talked about this on the Prospect Spectacular and before other things, you know, on other podcasts before the season started, but you have guys like, the good thing about Pittsburgh is you have guys like Brandon Compton, who are ready to step up and fill in some of those roles if you need them to, albeit it's not with that potential, you know, 65 grade prospect upside where you have like a 70 fastball that can just come out and flat out dominate hitters. But at least you have people to come in that you know can pitch and will fill a rotation.
Right.
Still, never good news to hear that you're top pitching prospect has to go get Tommy John surgery.
No, not good at all.
So, you know, we obviously best wishes to Jameson Taillon. Hopefully we'll be talking about the same timetable for this season, next season, where we'll be talking about him coming up at the midpoint in 2015.
Yeah. You hope. It's just, you know, you worry that now it's 12 to 18 months from now. You know, you just hope that he would be ready at the midpoint of next season.
Right, right. That's assuming that there aren't any setbacks as far as...
And it takes a little while to get your control back, usually.
Right. So, continuing on with the Pittsburgh, the topics of normal discussion in Pittsburgh, for whatever reason, Clint Hurdle continues to trot Travis Snyder out there.
Yeah, but he's not doing that bad.
He's performing serviceably, I suppose. You know, his triple slash in 22 plate appearances so far. So this is going into tonight. His triple slash was 300, 364, 300.
Here's the real question. What's his other option?
Jose Tabata.
Right. Who is performing serviceably as well, but not right. Exactly setting the world on fire.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. With Travis Snyder, I think you really know what you have. With Jose Tabata, I think there's still some upside, depending on, I guess you've heard whispers of Jose Tabata kind of checking out at times, and partially that was, or supposedly that was part of the reason why he was spending some of last season in AAA. I mean, maybe if his head's on right, he can perform marginally. You look at Jose Tabata's career numbers, and he hasn't, I mean, he's performed well in his major league career, but I don't know. I mean, you know what you have with Travis Snyder, and it's not very good. Yeah. I think there's still some upside with Jose Tabata, but basically this is all just one big charade, Jason. None of it matters, because
why is that?
We're just waiting until the Super 2 deadline passes so we can call up our uber outfield prospect Gregory Polanco.
Yeah. Let me ask you about Gregory Polanco.
Please, ask away.
Because I drafted him in my fantasy league, and I've got guys hurt all over the place, but I'm trying to hold on to him. how much longer do I have to hold on?
I mean, the Super 2 deadline is, what, middle of June? I mean, it's some weird arbitrary date that nobody really knows. They just kind of like... The Super 2 deadline always amuses me because every year people write articles about it. And everybody's like, yeah, we don't really know when it is. We just kind of take a guess.
But it changes.
Right, yeah, because it's based on is it percentage of games played or, you know...
Something
I mean, so it's some weird formula that nobody really knows the answer to anywhere. But yeah, so you're talking about middle of June. Yeah, it's going to be tough to hold out that long, especially if you need it now. But, you know, you need help now in your fantasy league. I think it's going to be worth it. I mean, I think you could see Gregory Polanco come up and perform like Starling Marte, which, you know, you're going to get speed, you're going to get a little pop, you're going to get great defense, which doesn't help you out in a fantasy league, but it's certainly going to keep him out on the field.
Yeah, it means they're going to play him. So, see, this is my plan. Right now I have Grady Sizemore, and I figure right around the time Grady Sizemore gets a sports hernia.
Right.
Gregory Polanco should be up.
Swoops in and saves the day with your roster.
That's my plan. What do you think?
I like it, yeah. Hold out as long as you can, man. I think Polanco's definitely going to be worth it. He's raking in AAA Indy to start the season. You know, everybody's been getting rained out everywhere, but he has 15 at-bats. Nice. He's hit 400, 438, 667, a home run, a walk, and two strikeouts.
Woo!
One caught stealing.
Yeah, so, I have that.
But yeah, I definitely think I think Polanco's going to be worth it for you. And that's what all we're just Pittsburgh, right? Travis Snyder and Jose Tabata are just trying to keep that spot warm for him. That's all that is.
Yeah, I know.
So that's it with Pittsburgh. That's everything that we've got to talk about in Pittsburgh and Cleveland. So you ready to move on to our Erie Seawolves?
Sure.
Let's do a little Seawolf shout out. So, the Seawolves have been getting rained out like crazy. I don't know if you've been following that at all. They opened up the season on the road. The first two games against Altoona were rained out. Then they won both games in a doubleheader on Saturday. Warwick Sopold started the first game. He threw five shutout innings in his win. So the Thunder from Down Under had a great start to his season.
Great.
Twitter favorite, Warwick Sopold. And then Eugenio Suarez hit two home runs in the second game of the doubleheader. So we got a great pitching performance. You got a great hitting performance in Altoona. You went and saw two games in Altoona that Saturday. You got to see some good baseball from the Seawolves. Ramon Cabrera, he started off the year. He started two games, 3-for-6 in his first two games of the season. And I'm kind of surprised Ramon Cabrera is still there because I feel like, you know, he got bumped up to AAA for a little bit last year, struggled, got sent back down. I don't know what else he has left to prove in AA.
Well, you know what the real problem is? The Tigers, they're not really familiar with this farm system.
They just kind of, they put everybody's name in a hat and just draw it out.
Yeah, they're like, I don't know.
Let's just put him there.
I guess we'll put him back in AA. Man.
They figured out what to do with Nick Castellanos. That was good. Call him up to Detroit.
Yeah.
But
they figured it out eventually.
Yeah, and Castellanos, great start to the season in Detroit. He's 5-for-13 to start off the year. He's sitting tonight because Detroit doesn't have the DH, so they had to move Cabrera over to third.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that old song and dance. So, yeah, I think it's safe to say, though, we're probably not going to see Nick Castellanos back in Erie ever.
Yeah,
which probably makes me sad because we only got to see him for a little bit, but makes me happy because he's moving on to do great things. So the Seawolves home opener Thursday, 6:35 versus Trenton Thunder. Gates open at 4:00. You can get in there starting around 4:00. So if you can make it out to the ballpark, definitely I would recommend it. Julie and I are talking about going to the home opener. A lot's going to depend on whether I get my grad work done, whether I'm a good boy and can get all my schoolwork finished. But we're talking about definitely trying to make it out there.
Make sure you get all your money, Andrew.
Yeah, I have to get all my work done before I'm allowed to go play like that. So
let's see. What's the forecast for Thursday?
Beautiful. It's supposed to be like 60 degrees.
Partly cloudy.
It's supposed to be
the... Windy, 66 degrees.
Yeah, nicest day of the week on Thursday.
No sun. Warm.
But we bought the Buck Night packages, so we're going to all the Buck Night games this season. I mean, I'll get to plenty of games if I don't make it to the home opener. So, but definitely get out to the old Geriot Ballpark. It's a howl of a good time. Love throwing that in there. Still my favorite tagline ever. Great marketing campaign there.
I can tell.
So that's going to wrap it up for today. That's everything. So we'd like to thank our listeners and ask if you're listening to us on iTunes, you give us a rate and review. You can check us out on the web at www.tsmbaseball.com. You can email us, tristatebb@tsmbaseball.com. You can follow us on the Twitter at tristatebb. And you can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/tsmbaseball. So for Jason Rougier, this is Andy Burdick, and we look forward to talking to you soon.